My boss told me that I was the worst employee they ever had and the company should fire me. I didn't want that risk. I had $50,000 of debt. So I learned entrepreneurship in 2013, and that's when I found entrepreneurship as the way out of the corporate grind.
How many properties do you own at the moment?
So we own over 200 units right now. So we buy houses, renovate houses, and then provide safe, affordable, functional housing here locally in Pennsylvania.
Former chemical engineer turned real estate investor.
CEO of Payzon Properties, Matthew Payzon.
It's impossible to do everything on our own. And that was me for a long time. But then I discovered that I was hitting a ceiling and I reached a point where I had to choose between, do I want to be a good husband and father or do I want to do this task? You need to stop spending the time doing the task and instead training, coaching, and empowering others to do those items, which comes with its own new set of challenges as you transition from a doer to a leader. And
hey, welcome Matthew Payzon from Payzon Properties. He's a self-made entrepreneur, left the corporate world, now is buying a lot of properties in Pennsylvania. And hey, Matt, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Sebastian, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I just talked in our pre-discussion that I'm interviewing now lots of people from the property industry in the US, and it's obviously a bit different to Europe. And you built an amazing business. You started from scratch. You're buying properties quite fast compared to how we would do this here in Europe. And yeah, let's dive into your business. And first of all, what are you doing with all these houses you accumulate?
Right. So we buy and then operate rental properties long term. So families either they need to live somewhere, so they either own their home or they rent. And so we're a provider, my wife and I, it's a small company, and we provide rental housing to families that aren't able to buy their own home. And so we buy houses, renovate houses, and then provide safe, affordable, functional housing here locally in Pennsylvania.
I think it's a very important area you're in. I mean, we have a big shortage on affordable housing in the big cities here in Europe, quite a big problem. It's an increasing problem. I guess it's similar in the States. At least here, we have quite strong protections for renters. Yeah, so when you have tenants in your house, it's very difficult to finish this, to end this relationship. Yeah, so there's a high protection for renters, which is in most of the cases good. It's certainly different in the US, but what is interesting to me, why is there such a strong market for people selling their houses right now in the US?
Yeah, well, a lot of the strength in pricing, it comes back to that there's little supply of housing. There are homes that come up for sale, and I think it's the same in Europe, although I'm not an expert in the European real estate market, but it comes back to some of the strength, and even in the recent uptick in rents that have been seen globally and here in the States, it comes back to that there are few homes that the renters can rent. Developers and builders aren't able to build due to escalating costs, higher interest rates, and also too, some of the protections that are in place in some states don't incentivize the owner to build or to renovate because it's difficult. If you get stuck in a situation where the renter isn't paying and it's difficult to end that relationship. So folks they pay a lot more attention to who they're letting into the homes because once they're in, they're harder to get out. And so I think for a lot of those reasons and more, the supply is low, which makes the price go up. Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's with any other business, you need a system also to selecting the right people let into your houses, to have a system for basically renovating the properties. And how did you build up this business from scratch?
Right. Well, systems and processes are at the core of it. Now, not to say that I was always there in the beginning. So I bought my first house in 2014 and I was a one-person show. I went around to find the properties. Then I was managing the property, collecting rent, coordinating repairs, the tenants would contact me. So I was doing everything. And over time, as I learned, I was able to, and I made a lot of mistakes along the way, tons of mistakes. And I would write those down. At the time, it was mental notes. I'm not doing that again. But as the company grew and as I acquired more properties, I would record these best practices so that someone else could come in and execute without making the same mistakes that I made. I knew what went wrong. And I knew what could happen if things weren't done right. And then I'd write them down and someone else could execute them. So And it was a full life cycle of a transaction. I had to find the deal, finance the deal, repair the deal, operate the deal, and then eventually sell the deal. So I got exposed to all the full life cycle of a deal, and then I was able to record it and write down that those learnings.
So you're basically wearing many hats, like many entrepreneurs do when they found something, making a lot of mistakes, like we all do, but learning from it, putting it into systems, documenting procedures, and handing it over to a team you built.
Well, that's right. And for a lot of entrepreneurs, documentation is a dirty word, right? And no one wants to write things down.
Yes.
And I have to record this, and I don't have time for that. And that was me for a long time. But then I discovered that I was hitting a ceiling. My wife and I have 3 children under 3. So we have 2 twins that are actually 2 months old. We have our son who's 2. And I had to, I reached a point where I had to choose between, do I want to be a good husband and father, or do I want to do this task? And, you know, I struggled with that balance because my mindset was for a long time, if I wanted to do something right, do it myself. And I quickly found that I was running out of time in the day, and I was getting burnt out. So, and I was also doing things that weren't driving the business forward. They were delivery items and not sales items, not growth items. So now my time is spent mostly on growth and building our brand, building our awareness, sales management, and less on some of the delivery functions.
I've been there. Yeah? I founded my first company, my first solo venture, I don't know, almost 30 years ago. Yeah? Which is, we are getting old. And there I also did everything in my little room in my flat. I did the sales, the delivery, the accounting. You name it, and going through. In the beginning, it's fun. It's very exciting, yeah. But it's important to really see the point where you have to change and where you have to hand things over, and yeah, have the right mindset that you don't need to do everything on your own, which is very important.
It's impossible to do everything on our own, but at the same time, it's also difficult sometimes to let go for the entrepreneur. I know it was for me. You need to stop spending the time doing the task and instead training, coaching, and empowering others to do those items, which comes with its own new set of challenges as you transition from a doer to a leader. But that's the transition I've been making over the last 1 to 2 years.
Yeah, but it's a fast development. And you said you just founded it, when you said a few years ago.
Yep. So I've been buying houses since 2014, but full time since earlier this year.
So it's a quick learning curve. When you look at your whole process chain, I mean, you buy the house, you develop the house, you rent it out. Where do you have the biggest challenges?
I would say it's different and it changes over time. But a lot of the reason that people don't get involved in real estate to begin with is that it's difficult dealing with the ongoing repair and maintenance and then the customer management, specifically the resident, and meeting their needs. So I'm gifted at finding the deals and financing the deals. That was never the issue for me personally. It was more just making sure that the operations and the delivery could fulfill the promise we were making to the customer.
I don't know how it's in the US right now, but here in Germany, we have a big shortage on skilled labor, you know, people who can help you repair your building, renovate, painters, whatever, you name it, you know. You wait months to get someone who shows up on your door, and then they often don't have enough time to fulfill your whole project. When you have a whole armada of houses, I could imagine this is quite a challenging endeavor.
Well, it is. And I think it comes back to relationships, because the contractors that I work with on the different jobs are folks that I've been doing business with for 8-10 years. So they know me, I know them, and they're able to dedicate that time because I'm a repeat customer. And it takes time for them, instead of having to go out and bid all these jobs that they don't win, and they spend their time just going around trying to get new work. They can have consistent work with me. So it's a win-win in that way, which has been good. But it wasn't always that way. When I was newer and I didn't know how to hire, I didn't know what to look for, it was much more of a challenge back then.
So how did you structure your operations? I guess you have a lot of IT systems in place. We are in the world of AI. So I guess a lot of AI applications. Are you leveraging virtual assistants? Tell me, how did you structure your operations?
Right. So I have an executive assistant who sits in the Philippines and a team of 6 there. And they're doing mostly the front end deal finding and initially finding the houses, in call intake, lead intake coordinators, folks that pr- prepare the financing packages and search for the motivated leads so we can do outreach to them. And then I have two acquisitions managers based here locally in the States that go to the properties and do their sales process and sign the deals. And then I have a couple of other support folks on the operations and back end side that are checking in with the property manager on different tasks, doing our reporting, making sure that things that the email said we need to do for one-off situations, we follow up in a timely manner, that they get closed. So in total, we're 10. We're hiring a couple more folks to assist operations. And we work through a third-party property management company, three of them. And they handle the day-to-day details with the residents. They do the leasing. They collect the rents. They do the repairs. They do the accounting and bookkeeping so that we can review the reports. But they do a lot of the day-to-day tasks. They list the properties for us for sale when we're ready to sell. So they're the boots on the ground locally, but we have a whole support staff around them to acquire, finance, and onboard the properties.
Having five people in the Philippines, some of the listeners might say, oh my God, this is something I would never do because you don't have control. You probably never met them. How does it work? I mean, I have my personal opinion about this. I also have a team in the Philippines. But just to give the listeners a bit of an understanding how amazing this works out.
Well, I initially suffered from trust issues. I thought that, well, you know, I need to hire someone that I'm nearby because then I can meet with them. And I quickly found that that was a limiting belief. They assist me with using AI for our social media, coming up with ideation. They do a lot of our SEO type work for our website. There's just a lot of things that you don't need to be in person for, even though real estate is a local business. There's a physical house. There's so many support services. And so I had to overcome that mental barrier as well about working with remote folks and, well, can I trust them with this private information? And that was a part of me letting go as an entrepreneur. That wasn't, well, is it a Philippines VA issue, or it could have been a local person issue. The main thing for me was letting go and learning to be a leader, learning to trust the right people, but having a process to do that, a vetting process, a hiring process, making sure that person's personality matches to the role, having basically a personality assessment for that role and making sure there's a fit. So getting the right person in the right role and then letting go and trusting and empowering that person, giving them work instructions, giving them systems, giving them IT tools, giving them training and support so that they can execute on their role. So that for me took about 2 years to really understand and build. It was not because, again, I was a solopreneur. I was doing everything myself. I did my own bookkeeping for 7 years. So now I have someone doing those items that sits in the Philippines, and it was not an overnight switch for me, but I was forced to trust, and I was forced to build these things because I wanted to spend time with my family.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, I'm working with remote people for over a decade now, and I started with initial small project, hired a few people from India. And then gradually built this on. And of course, I mean, you have a situation where it's not working out, but hey, you also have this when you hire someone and you put them in your office, right?
Right.
So, and I can only say it's been an amazing game changer for me. Those guys in the Philippines are so helpful, motivated. They do an amazing job. And I'm more than happy that I have them in my team.
Oh, well, absolutely. And they're so motivated. So I won't work with someone who's not motivated. And there's a series of test work and assessments that they do prior to interviewing with me to measure their attention to detail and their other qualities of their work. But there's so much value that the folks can bring remotely. And it doesn't really matter to me where anyone sits or where they're from. It's more what's the quality of work, their motivation, who are they as a person? Because my team is adding an immense amount of value and I'm very proud of them.
Exactly. What kind of assessments do you use?
So we use predictive index, mm-hmm. and we have a predictive index that it's the assessment for that particular role based on the tasks that that role does. And then each applicant coming through our hiring funnel will take the PI assessment for their individual and then to see if there's a match between what type of personality they have and the personality that is most likely to succeed in the role. With the idea being, let's quickly see if there's going to be a good fit, because if someone's very analytical and great with numbers and spreadsheets, but they don't prefer to be on the phone with customers. We want to know that up front because this is a sales customer based role. So we use those things as a type of match, not just as a screening tool, but we want the employee to be happy. We want them to achieve a level of satisfaction in their role, to value their work, that they feel that they're making a contribution. And we don't want to put them in the wrong role where they can't achieve their highest potential.
I'm also using a lot of assessments with my clients and with the companies I invest in. And it's a win-win situation. Yeah, it's on one hand, of course, you see, does this person fit to the team? But on the other hand, as you said, are they happy in the long run? Yeah, so it's no point getting someone into a position and then they are not happy, they're not performing, and in the long run, it's not working out. So it's a tool which helps both sides in the beginning to really see if this is a match. And I'm using DISC, Motivator, and Critical Thinking, but in the end, it's a similar method. And yeah, the interesting thing is when you bundle this together and match this to certain roles, it's an amazing tool to see, okay, this might be a good developer, but it's not a good salesperson. Yeah. So
right.
On the other hand, you really see if their behavioral attributes and motivators really fit to what is expected from them.
Well, that's right. Because we want, just like we want our residents to stay and be satisfied with the service that we provide for the houses and the quality of the home that we've renovated, it's the same for the employees on the team. We want them to feel like they're adding value, that they're creating something, that they're maximizing their potential so that they can grow as individuals. They're not just, you know, it's not just an employee somewhere in the Philippines to me, to our company. This is a human being, someone that's looking to grow, to up-level their skills. And we are the organization, the conduit through which that happens. So we want it to be a good fit for them and for us.
I mean, we are in the time where AI is really in the news every day. You talked about using AI for marketing. Where else could you foresee intense usage of artificial intelligence for your business?
A lot of different ways. This podcast itself will become Reels. And there's Opus AI that we use that will go through this interview and actually put the words from the transcription onto the screen in a certain format. So we use tools like that. We also use, of course, many people use ChatGPT for ideation, generating ideas. We use, there's just so many things like that for building scripts anytime we need to, or for some of our cadences. We have automation, we use Salesforce. And so depending on the phase that the lead or opportunity is in, there's a certain drip sequence that individual would be in to maintain contact with them. And so we use AI for scripting that we then plug into the automation with our CRM. So there's just so many ways where we're, you know, for our blog posts, we have various blogs for our SEO efforts, for other things, for our social media posts. I mean, there's just so many ways where we can get out of having that work is valuable, but doing those tasks is very time consuming and grinding. So if we can focus our team on other aspects, or just to come in to do the last 10% instead of the full 100%, it saves us a lot of time. There's just so many areas where we're implementing AI right now.
Exactly. Well, it's not a tool to replace people. It's a tool to give them more power, give them more skills, and speed up processes. That's the most important message. And I know that there are many people still hesitant using that, but I can only say try it out. You know, just things like ChatGPT, give it my kids, I have two kids, they're 12 and 14. They have it on their phone now, you know. And last week we created a new YouTube channel for my youngest son. He's into small insects and stuff. Yeah. So we created a name on ChatGPT, then a logo, a background picture, you know, within 20 minutes was done.
That's awesome.
And he said, "Oh, Daddy, I need your pro account." I said, yeah, you can have it.
That's great.
They need to grow up with it, you know, they need to really embrace this and learn this.
Well, that's great. You can use AI to really tap into their interests and help them explore, right? So that's great.
The limit is our imagination, yeah? So we have to really think, okay, where else can we use this? What can we do to get the best out of this and create some new value?
I love that. That's fantastic. So true.
Want to share some numbers? How many properties do you own at the moment?
So we own over 200 units right now. I'm in Eastern Pennsylvania. Many of them we've purchased in the last few years. It wasn't always that way. And, you know, in terms of at any given time, 5% of the portfolio is vacant in some type of turnover. So the average lease that we have, families typically stay on average about 4 to 5 years. So that's really good for the industry. It helps us remain profitable. And coming back to the customer service, if we don't do the basic things, residents will leave and that's more expensive for us. So we try to provide good quality and good customer service. In terms of what we're buying, we usually buy 50 to 60 houses per year net after what we buy and then what we sell. So that's on average what we're doing. And then we'll hold them anywhere from 5 to 8 years, pretty much a long-term operator. We don't really flip or wholesale properties. Like everyone loves the HGTV, you know, make the house nice and sell it and all this and make, you know, make a boatload of money in you know, 90 days or whatever. That's not really what we do. We're more like invested long-term in our community to make it a better place, not to make a quick buck off a situation.
It doesn't help the people who are looking for affordable houses when everything is turned into expensive high-end properties and no one can afford it anymore.
Well, that's right. I mean, I understand there is a market for that, but we don't really do that market. Now, that's not to say we haven't done a flip or two. I think this year we did two. That's more for just operating. But the rest of the houses we've purchased are workforce housing rental properties that just fill a basic human need.
What got you into this business? I mean, what was the flipping point? You said you worked for a corporate. What made you change, leave a secure space and a big company to do your own adventure?
Right. And I actually should have started a little bit with that. But so I graduated from chemical engineering school in 2010. And that was at the bottom of the great financial crisis here that impacted everyone globally. And it was difficult to get employment. But I was one of a few select people that worked for a large chemical company that year. Their intake was, I think, 10 folks. So very small. I was fortunate to have that job. And my first role out of college was in an IT role. I was building servers, shipping them out to, you know, remote locations. There were no instructions, no processes. It was sink or swim with this group. And I was trained for chemical engineering. And here I was building computer servers and I wasn't a good fit for the role. Not that I couldn't do it, but I didn't meet their expectations. And my boss, he told me that I was the worst employee they ever had and the company should fire me. And so I realized that having only one customer is risky, my employer. I realized that if one boss could make or break your career, and I didn't want that risk. I had $50,000 of debt. My family is from lower middle class. We didn't have much, but I borrowed to go to college. In the States, it's more expensive, and I borrowed $50,000 and worked in college to keep my bills low. So I was terrified. How am I going to afford to pay these loans if I get fired? And I just realized I needed something else. And so then I did my master's degree at IE Business School in Madrid. And I learned, it's an entrepreneurial school. I learned entrepreneurship in 2013. And that's when I found entrepreneurship as the way out of the corporate grind.
So you got your fair bit of Europe, yeah? Madrid, amazing place.
Yes. Yeah. I have not been to 3 or 4 countries in Europe. So I'm pretty well traveled in Europe, and I learned about entrepreneurship in Europe.
But it's interesting. I had clients in the chemical industry. They're very process-driven, very secure, safety-oriented. And on the other hand, IT is, at least back then, it was a lot of agility, sometimes chaos. So how did you manage with the chemical mindset? You know, I mean, chemical mindset means building plants which need to operate very safely and then getting into this chaotic environments of an IT company.
Well, I didn't do a good job, and that's why my boss said I was the worst employee he ever had. But what I did learn, the operating chemical plants and working with chemical processes, is that you need a safety factor on a safety factor. And then you need, if there are multiple points of failure, there needs to be a solution so that each one of those things doesn't happen, and multiple ones. So not only do you design the system to be inherently safe, you put in a safety factor, and then anything that could go wrong, you already have multiple solutions. There's process flow maps, and I don't want to get too technical, but it's really understanding what the plant does, what your result is that you expect, what the inputs are, and then what happens in between. And I think business is very similar, where you need to understand where you're going. You need to have structure. You need to have processes and procedures all along the way that say, this is what we do when this happens. This is what we do when that happens. And really designing, instead of a plant, it's a business. And you need these support functions and different things. There are control systems and chemical engineering and other things to make sure certain things happen. And it's the same in business. It's just a different type of plant, right? So the analogy is true. And I was able to transition from engineering into business by applying the high level principles, but I had to learn what they were specifically for business, which is why it took me so long. I made the jump eventually, but I'm not the smartest guy in the room. And it took me, you know, I'm not like some of these gifted born entrepreneurs that just go out and do it. Like, it was a slow process for me.
But maybe the situation where your boss fired you was the best thing that happened in your life, you know, because it put you on a path to where you are right now. I always say, I mean, this is from a statement from Tony Robbins, but I love this. Life is happening for you, not to you. Yeah. So everything which happens in our life, often it has a purpose and it puts us on a path and it gives us the skills we need in the future. So great journey, and I wish you all the best to expand your business in Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Sebastian, and thanks for letting me share with your listeners.
Thanks for being here. Yeah. Have a good one.
Thank you. All right. Take care.
Thank you for tuning into the High Performance CEO Show. I'm your host, Sebastian Schieke, and it's been a pleasure serving you. Please subscribe to our show on your favorite platform and leave us a review. Your support helps us reach more listeners and create a bigger impact. Check out our website, sebastianschieke.com, for additional resources. Until next time, be bold, be exceptional, be outstanding, be a leader.